I like to think that most people with a podcast or a radio show go on vacation and then don't continue doing a podcast or radio show. But as I sit in Florida, I'm not outside enjoying the beach. I'm in here enjoying the Kansas City Chiefs, another victory, a clinched playoff berth, but probably not the AFC West anymore. All of that and so much more on this episode of the Ref and the Kicker podcast on Arrowhead Addict Radio. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. You can tweet to me on Twitter at JBBriscoe. As I said, I'm on the road, but I brought my brand new microphone with me, so everything is just like being at home, except for the weather's way nicer. On this episode, we're going to kick it off by talking about who the Chiefs are really. We're going to recap the victory over the Browns, change how we talk about Marcus Peters, quickly preview the Raiders game, and take a look at where we want the Chiefs to be come playoff time. I think the answer for that is, strangely, probably not in Arrowhead. All of that and whatever else just happens to show up on this surprisingly coastal edition of Roughing the Kicker. What are the Kansas City Chiefs really? We've seen at least two different teams, and the divide is very clear. It changed with the Steelers win over Landry Jones, and then the blowout victory over the Lions in London. Those first 6 weeks, the Chiefs beat the Houston Texans and then lost to a bunch of playoff teams plus the Bears. Every other team is going to the playoffs from that stretch. Then, when Landry Jones comes to Arrowhead, the Chiefs, even then, looking as bad as they did, I thought the Chiefs would lose that game. But that win wasn't totally shocking because it was against Landry Jones and the Steelers. Well, then the Chiefs go to London, blow out the Lions. You think, hey, maybe there's something here, but the Lions looked terrible. Well, then the Chiefs go to Denver and win, and everything changes, and then the winning streak continues for 9 total games. At least two different teams there, and I think maybe unfairly we look at it that way because of the team the Chiefs lost to. They should have beaten the Broncos at home. Losing to the Packers at that point, the Packers have really slid since then. But losing to the Packers in Green Bay at that point, no shame there. Losing in Cincinnati, easy call. Most teams did. Losing to the Bears at home by 1 point is the inexcusable one. And the defense fell apart towards the end, but only gave up a total of 18 points. It was the offense that fell apart, and that was the game where the Chiefs lost Jamal Charles. Frankly, I think Andy Reid did not adjust enough in that game after Charles got injured. Then losing in Minnesota, only scoring 10 points against the Vikings was terrible. Only giving up 16 was great. The defense has been good consistently, except the most they've given up was in that stretch, Broncos, Packers, Bengals losses. Since then, the defense has held up their end of the bargain. But then let's look at what the Chiefs have done since then. These last several weeks, I'm gonna look at the last 3 or 4 weeks for these other playoff teams to make a point here in a second. We'll start with the Chiefs. The Chiefs just barely beat the Browns. It was close. Talk about that game more in a little bit. Blow out the Ravens in Baltimore, although it was a little bit of a slow start, a common theme. Beating the Chargers by only 7 points the week before, 10-3, is terrifying. 10 points against the Chargers is inexcusable. Crushing the Raiders, or at least scoring big on the Raiders, 34-20, and then beating the Bills at home, 30-22, that game was terrifying in the first half, but the Chiefs came back and won it in convincing fashion. Speaking of convincing fashion, the victories over the Chargers by 30, and the victory over the Broncos and Denver the week before. That takes you back to the bye week. It looks like there are different teams there. They might all be the same. And on that point, I want to go to something that Ty DeClaire, at Ty DeClaire 44, a fantastic listener of the show, tweeted me this just before I started recording. Said, just a thought I had about the Chiefs. The 1-5 turnaround, in a way, proves the point that the talent was always there with this team, like we already know. So that points to leadership slash coaching as finding their traction and getting the team rolling. Obviously, a few key mistakes were the difference between 1-5 and 3-3. But I think we really have to tip our hats to Reid and his team of coaches, because for as much as we've criticized him in the past, he deserved just as much praise for this year. And I agree with that sentiment. And I think Andy Reid handing over some of the play calling duties to offensive coordinator Doug Peterson was a excellent choice that has showed proven dividends for the Chiefs offensively. And I think that's an interesting point about coaching. And we've seen the entire team improve in this third year of Andy Reid. And we've seen Andy Reid improve, I would argue, to the point where he was dabbing in the locker room after the Browns game, which is simultaneously the best and worst thing I've ever seen, but I loved the picture so much. What the Chiefs have done from a talent perspective, I think, is very similar, and I agree that it's the coaching that has created this separation, not a separation between a 1-5 team and a 9-0 team, because that doesn't happen, but the difference, the separation in each of these individual games. the Chiefs were getting slaughtered by Sammy Watkins at home against the Bills. Coaching at halftime shut out Sammy Watkins in the second half of that game. Shut him out. Late game stops, and even if it's just barely, if it's just enough, like happened with the Browns, where it wasn't even necessarily good plays, but running out of time, it's part talent, and it's a huge part coaching. So I agree with that sentiment that the coaching has not only improved since last year, but since that the winning streak. Everything's improved since then. But I think if we took all these games and jumbled up the order, I think we would have had a much more level-headed season from a fan perspective, and rightfully so. If you take these losses to the Broncos and the Packers and the Bengals, and you shove them in between some big wins over the Broncos, wins over in Oakland, and by the way, the Chiefs only have two wins over playoff teams, the one in Denver and the one against the Steelers at home, and both of those were backup quarterbacks or injured quarterbacks. Obviously, the Peyton Manning one was a little bit, it just was insane, and I don't know if you want to call Brock Osweiler the starter or not at this point, but beating Landry Jones is nothing to really be super thrilled about. But if you jumble that up, you're saying the Chiefs are a wildcard team, this is where we are. You're not saying the Chiefs are a top three pick team, which you were saying after week six, I was saying after week six, and you're not saying that they are a total Super Bowl lock, like you might want to say if you look at a team that has nine straight wins. So what are the Chiefs now? I'll answer that by saying they're very near the top of the AFC, but they're just an above-average team in the larger scope of the last few years of the NFL. And that sounds like a contradiction, because it kind of is at first, okay? Very near the top of the AFC. I might argue that they have the second-best chance to win the AFC if every game was played on a neutral field. I can make that argument. I probably won't, but I can make that argument. But they're also just kind of an above-average team in my mind. The place where those two statements come together is by realizing that everyone in the AFC has major flaws and bad losses. And again, the Chiefs lost only games to playoff teams, with the exception of the Bears, and then only beat two playoff teams. One of them was not a real playoff team because it had Landry Jones. The other one's the Broncos, who have slidden quite a bit lately. But now let's look at the other teams in the AFC who are going to be making the playoffs. Let's start with the Houston Texans. Obviously, the Chiefs beat them in week one. They have major flaws. They have a heck of a defense. They have one of the best offensive weapons in the NFL in DeAndre Hopkins, who remains underrated because of his quarterback play. But look at what they're doing. Look what they don't have on the offensive side of the ball. They don't have anyone in the run game that you're afraid of. It's Alfred Morris and Jonathan Grimes and Chris Polk right now. Arian Foster is done. Their quarterback, Brian Hoyer, had been good. Brian Hoyer had been playing quite well. Ryan Mallett's out of the picture. But Brandon Whedon just played for them, and they just trounced the Titans last week. But their quarterback is Brandon Whedon right now. If the Chiefs go to Houston, I think they would be favored on the road in a playoff game. And I would absolutely take that matchup. And if you look at those flaws in what they don't have and look at the quarterback play, it's huge. But lately, they have the least bad losses out of any of these teams, I think, than the Chiefs. And we'll go through all of them really quickly, but it's victories against everybody except for the Patriots at home and at Buffalo. Other than that, they haven't lost until they went to Miami, back in week seven. They've been awfully good, but you can see how the Chiefs beat that team again. Let's go to the top of the AFC. Let's look at the Patriots. The Patriots have injury issues unlike most teams in the NFL. They just lost to the Jets. Then they lost to the Eagles in week 13. They lost to the Broncos in week 12. They started off spectacularly, but they have three losses in week 12, 13, and 16 that make you raise your eyebrows a little bit. That's because their receiving core is just absolutely battered, as are their running backs. Tom Brady is great. Their defense is not as good as it's been in years past. They just gave up 26 points to the Jets in overtime, 20 points in regulation. They gave up 35 points to the Philadelphia Eagles in Foxborough. The Eagles cannot win an important game to save their life. They couldn't beat Washington to keep their season alive. Not only is the defense flawed, the offense is flawed. They have Tom Brady, but he is not unstoppable, especially within this context. Let's go to the New York Jets. The Chiefs wouldn't have to face the Jets until the AFC Championship game because they'd both be wildcard teams. So we probably don't have to worry about the Jets until that happens. If it happens, I'd be thrilled just to be in the AFC Championship game. But they haven't lost a game since Week 11 when they lost to the Texans and they lost to the Bills before that. They haven't beaten many good teams except for the Patriots last week, obviously. But Dolphins, Giants, Titans, and Cowboys, none of those wins blow you away. Their weaknesses, I think, are harder to find and more similar to the Chiefs in that way because their quarterback is Ryan Fitzpatrick. Do you think Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to win you a playoff game? I don't particularly. But their running game has been very, very good. Again, you can make some parallels with the Chiefs here, I think. Chris Ivory and Bilal Powell, those two guys have revitalized the run game a little bit. Ryan Fitzpatrick is not only managing the game, but I think, as Alex Smith is sort of exceeding the expectations, exceeding what we know about Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's playing to his ceiling right now. The defense is playing very well. 20 points to the Patriots, 16 to the Cowboys, 8 to the Titans, 20 to the Giants. Even though those aren't great teams, those are good results. I would be afraid of the Jets right now, except for the Chiefs aren't going to have to deal with them for a while, but the Jets are one of the favorites in the AFC, I would say, although they'll have to do it all on the road, as the Chiefs likely will. We know about the Denver Broncos. They just lost back-to-back games to the Steelers and the Raiders before beating the Bengals on Monday night. We saw them in Kansas City in Week 2. That's a totally different team. Seeing the Chiefs in Week 10 going to Denver and winning is more the team we're looking at right now. They have flaws. Their defense is very good, but their offense has not been nearly as successful without healthy Peyton Manning. Brock Osweiler looked good early on. They sort of come back down to ground level a little bit here. I am not afraid of the Broncos. I don't want to go to Denver again if the Chiefs can help it. But if things happen in the AFC West to where they would have come to the Arrowhead, I would have been totally on board with that game. Look at the Cincinnati Bengals. They have AJ McCarron playing quarterback. They don't even have Andy Dalton. The Bengals have been as snake bitten of a team in the playoffs as everyone except for the Chiefs. Losing to the Steelers, losing to the Broncos at home. I'm sorry, in Denver. The Bengals have their problems. They also lost to the Texans and Cardinals. Not bad teams, but they're going in the wrong direction right now, just as everyone is. The Steelers probably won't make the playoffs because of their loss in Baltimore, who the Chiefs just blew out. Baltimore is not a good team. I hate to spend that much time on other teams, but I think it's really, really important to understanding where the Chiefs stand right now in this playoff picture. They're not going to see the Jets. One of the teams is going to lose before the AFC Championship game. Everyone else, and the Jets are flawed too, everyone has exploitable flaws in their team, in their roster, in their coaching, in their game plans, in their season as a whole. You can look at any of these teams and go, yeah, what about that game? What happened there? How do we recreate that? The Chiefs can look at this game that just happened with the Patriots and how do we do what the Jets just did? Because they're similarly made teams. How do we look at what the Jets just did? You know, Brandon Marshall, Jeremy Maclin, the comparisons between the Chiefs and the Jets I think are really fascinating. So I would love to see them play. How do we recreate that? How do we do that again? How do we avoid doing this factor? Those things put the AFC on a more or less even plane. Do I think the Patriots are justifiably the favorites? Absolutely. Does Denver's defense scare me? A little bit. Not more than the Chiefs' defense if everyone comes back healthy. And that's the other thing with the Chiefs. You look at some of those games in there, the injuries the Chiefs have dealt with, there's been no DeAnthony Thomas for a huge stretch. There's been no Tom Bahali last week, no Justin Houston for several weeks, no Hussein Abdullah for several weeks. You add those guys to a team that's won 9 games in a row. A 9-0 team. Missing, I would say, 3 of their most impactful defensive players and the most impactful special teamer. Add those guys back to the mix for the playoffs. Who should be favored above this team? Do they have flaws? Absolutely. Albert Wilson's their number 2 receiver, who's played pretty well, but I have my concerns. There's no third option. Travis Kelce's had some issues holding on to the ball. Alex Smith is still Alex Smith to the point where I'm not willing to push all my chips in. They've beaten nothing but bad teams for a while. There are concerns with the Chiefs. You say, why do they get a slow start in this game, in this game, in this game? Why did Sammy Watkins torch them for the first half? How come Jimmy Clausen was able to throw it over Marcus Peters? And those are fair questions. But then you look at what the other teams are bringing to the table. If what Ty said is fair and the Chiefs coaching, and I agree with this, is giving the team an advantage across the board, the playoffs are going to come down to coaches. Because every team has flaws. It's going to be up to the coaching staffs to figure out how to exploit them and then the players to execute those plans. And at this point, I think Andy Reid and that staff is going to be able to find the ways to exploit the Texans, the Patriots, the Bengals, the Jets. Find those flaws. And I think the Chiefs are talented enough to actually follow through on it. So this is not my Super Bowl prediction. But I think the Chiefs are just as good and just as flawed as every other team in the AFC. Now, before we get to the Browns game and how the Chiefs pulled away for their ninth consecutive victory of the season, I'm talking about Patreon for just a quick minute. Patreon is a virtual tipping and rewards website where you can support your favorite creators and their projects they're working on by giving a little bit of money each month. At patreon.com/RTK, you can support this podcast and this podcast host and hopefully continue to expand how much I can do, how well I can do it in different things, hopefully down the road. For example, this beautiful microphone I bought using the money from the fine donors helping support this show via patreon.com/RTK. Thank you for supporting the show. People who continually support the show with just too much money. First of all, a $20 group, Don Beal at DonBeal32, Andy Simpson, Steven Smith, and Derek Vaughn at D_Vaughn88. And then the $10 group, Christine Roadlander at C. Roadlander and Ty DeClaire at Ty DeClaire44. Those two have been around forever. And the $5 group, Josh Beadle and Ben Rahman. Thank all of you so much for supporting the show the way that you do. And if you want to support the show in other ways, you can share it in person with your friends and family. You can tweet about it, share it on Facebook. You can tweet me at JB Briscoe on Twitter. Or if you want to share it on Facebook, go to facebook.com/RTK show. You can like it, and then you can share the posts from there. Also, the quickest way to make sure you get the show all the time is to subscribe on iTunes. And that's really important because sometimes it takes a little bit of time to get it from the iTunes post to having it be published on Arrowhead Addict. So if you listen to the show on Arrowhead Addict, continue to use that for all of the commenting, and I usually write up a little bit extra about the show on Arrowhead Addict. But if you want to get the show right away, subscribe on iTunes, and make sure you never miss an episode that way. Okay, now let's go to the Browns. Kansas City Chiefs 17, Cleveland Browns 13, in a game that was way closer than I thought it would have been, and frankly closer than it should have been. Neither quarterback had much of a statistical day. Alex Smith was 15 for 22 for 125 yards. Johnny Manziel was 13 for 32 with 136 yards and one interception. But Alex Smith, the main difference there, one interception as well. Not his fault. It was batted. But two touchdowns for Alex Smith in this game. And more importantly, I think for both quarterbacks, especially for Johnny Manziel, Manziel had 11 carries for 108 yards, and then Alex Smith had 6 for 54. So the quarterback game there was not a wash. I think it ended up being in Alex Smith's favor because of the touchdown throws, the receptions by Jeremy Maclin and Travis Kelce, who each had 49 and 43 yards, respectively. Not much of a beautiful game as far as the passing game goes. But Kendrick West, 14 for 62. Spencer Ware, only 5 carries, 15 yards. Seems like they're still bringing him back slowly. That's what the game looked like from a large perspective. Now let's go in to a, not necessarily play-by-play, but let's break it down a little bit here. Chiefs started off the game with a good field position, a nice return from Nile Davis, starting together some nice short chunk plays with a nice call by Alex Smith to scramble for the first down. Kendrick West, 3rd-and-1 pickup, and a great play action slant from Smith to Albert Wilson. They burned a timeout on 2nd-and-10, which was not great. But then the next play, beautiful pass into the end zone to Jeremy Maclin, put the Chiefs up 7-0, put Jeremy Maclin over 1,000 yards on the year. That was as good of a throw as you can make in the red zone. There were 3 Browns in the area of Jeremy Maclin, and Smith nailed it. And I tweeted this, but even more so than the deep shots, those red zone darts are what Alex Smith needs to be able to hit consistently. Lately, he has, and that is extremely dangerous. That elevates the potential of the Chiefs' offense more than anything else. Yes, being able to take deep shots and have 1 out of every 3 of them be completed or be pass interference is huge. That is a huge thing to add to the Chiefs' offense. And Jeremy Maclin does that. But what Jeremy Maclin does that's even more important, and that Alex Smith is doing even better, which is even more important, is giving Smith a trustworthy target in the end zone, and then Alex Smith is making the throws, and Maclin is getting open. That might be the most valuable thing that Jeremy Maclin brings, because it brings out the best in Alex Smith. Alex Smith and Charkandrick West, wow, what a weird sentence this is going to be. Alex Smith and Charkandrick West can work the ball down the field. Andy Reid is using this offense very well. Albert Wilson has been a real asset in moving the ball down the field. He's scored a couple times. But whenever you get to the red zone, I don't know if Alex Smith trusts Travis Kelce as much as he hopefully one day will, because Kelce needs to earn that. That's not Smith's fault. That's Kelce's. But he trusts Jeremy Maclin. Jeremy Maclin gets open. Smith makes the throws, and then Maclin makes the catch. And that sounds like the most simple step-by-step way of how a good play goes in the NFL, but that's because it's working. That's something the Chiefs haven't had in a long time, and Dwayne Bowe had that for a little while. Also, Dwayne Bowe played in this game. I think he had a couple targets, no receptions. Nothing happened in his return to Arrowhead, which is kind of sad. I really like Dwayne Bowe. But Dwayne Bowe had that factor for a little while. But the Chiefs haven't truly had it for, I would say, at least 2 years now. And Jeremy Maclin might be doing it at a better level than Dwayne Bowe ever did. And Jeremy Maclin has a better quarterback than Dwayne Bowe ever did, because Alex Smith in those first 2 years of Andy Reid, not the same. So those red zone shots, and Smith throwing it into the end zone, not throwing a 3-yard pass and then hoping that the receiver takes it into the end zone, hugely, hugely important for this offense, and it's working now. Then on defense, Dee Ford got in Manziel's face, Johnny Manziel, quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, in case you didn't know. And Manziel made a terrible throw to an open Gary Barnage. Next play, Eric Berry should have had a pick. Manziel threw it behind Duke Johnson, and the Browns punted from inside the 5. Chiefs are near midfield. And then West went for 22. Mitch Moore snapped the ball too soon on 3rd and 4. The Chiefs went for it on 4th and 4, which made me nervous, but I liked the call. Smith dropped back to pass, look at his options, and don't miss that part. Because one of the criticisms for Alex Smith is that he runs too soon. He runs too much. Alex Smith dropped back, went through his reads, and then ultimately tucked it and ran for the first down. You can say, and I would say, this is true about Johnny Manziel, which I'll talk about several times throughout this game. Johnny Manziel is a very, very good runner, but I don't think he's that good of a quarterback, at least not right now. Plus, his off-the-field stuff has to be killing the Browns front office. But just on the field, Manziel is a very good runner and an average, at best, quarterback right now, which is reasonable. He's very young. But Alex Smith, it has developed, and maybe you could even say this, I think you definitely can, not only from last year, but from the first half of this season, as Alex Smith, and I hope you would agree that I've been beating this drum for a year and a half now, or 2 years now. When Alex Smith feels like he can trust his offensive line and trust his receivers to get open, and the entire offense is clicking better, he is so much less hesitant to go through his reads. He will take the time to look through his receivers and more often than not find the open one or decide that there's not an open one at the time and that he needs to take off and run for the first down as he did here on 4th and 4. So not only has Alex Smith been a playmaker, which is undeniably true in my mind, Alex Smith has been a playmaker. He's not been a game manager. And as I talked about with Ryan Fitzpatrick earlier, it's not even just pushing through their ceilings, but Alex Smith is making plays. Red zone stuff, 4th down scramble for the first. He's playing confidently and with some fire. And after the game, there was a vine of him cheering when he found out that the Steelers lost and the Chiefs clinched a playoff berth. I really, truly hope that Alex Smith, for as many reasons as possible, hope the Chiefs win a playoff game. But I hope Alex Smith wins a playoff game, and then that changes his legacy as a Chiefs quarterback. Because of what he's doing right now, if that continues, he earned it. He will have earned an updated legacy, because he has been making plays and been developing as a quarterback, which is something you don't expect to see, because he feels old. He feels like an old quarterback. But he has been developing as a player. And then right after that, Smith incomplete, Travis Kelce, Santos makes a field goal, and it goes to 10-0 Chiefs. And before that incompletion, though, from Smith, he had completed 10 straight third-down passes, according to Kevin Harlan on CBS. Then the Browns started off with terrible field position for the second straight drive, but Isaiah Crowell burst through the Chiefs' defense in the front seven for 28 yards. Ron Parker saved the touchdown. Then on 3rd and 1, Dee Ford dragged down Duke Johnson from behind and forced another Cleveland punt. Offensively, skipping ahead to 3rd down, West got 3 on 3rd and 4, and Sharkendrick West has been very good in 3rd and short situations. We talked about that on the TV broadcast also. Then he didn't get it, though, in that case. Colquitt punted it for the first time, and it was not a good punt, and then Chris Conley about killed the return man. And if you missed that, I didn't see a vine of it or anything. It really kind of came and went with his one loud boom and then disappeared like a sonic boom. Conley just obliterated the return man. And then on 3rd down for the Browns, the Chiefs got burned on a play-action pitch fake on a very interesting play that left Jim Dre wide open, and the Browns picked up 19. The tight ends did a strange crossing thing at the line of scrimmage. It was very interesting, but it gave the Browns 19 yards. Then on 2nd and 3, Ron Parker had a fantastic play to sniff out a screen, And then on 3rd and 4, Manziel scrambled for the first down, and as he was about to get hit, he pitched it to Duke Johnson for a play that looked like it was straight out of NFL Street. Which, if you never played NFL Street, go find a GameCube for $15, buy NFL Street 2, and then tweet me. Or if you did play NFL Street, go find it and just play it for like 2 hours, and then tweet me. Because I love NFL Street 2 so much. Andy Reid challenged the ruling on the field, and it was overturned, which surprised me. So a nice job there by Andy Reid and his crew, who told him to challenge it. And then the Browns had to settle for a field goal. So at that point, 10-3. Back on the offensive side of the ball, Smith took a deep shot downfield, really stretched it out to Chris Conley. Conley beat Tre'Mon Williams, and Williams basically tackled Conley, which was a pass interference for a 40-yard penalty. And that will not show up in Alex Smith's stats or in Chris Conley's stats for the end of the year. But that's another benefit of taking those deep shots. And as I went through the box score earlier, if you add 40 more yards, Alex Smith is sitting at 165, and that might have gone the rest of the way. If Williams hadn't tackled Conley, that's probably a touchdown if that throw lands in his hands, which is a big if, but you can certainly add those 40 yards to the stat line and feel good about it because it was a 40-yard play, complete or not, because of the pass interference. So that's something to keep in mind with those deep shots downfield. It doesn't always have to be complete. It doesn't always have to be a touchdown. But if it's incomplete, that's no bigger loss than a run play that goes for 3 yards. And that's a much bigger gain of potential, especially whenever a penalty there could end up being 40 yards. Later, Smith went deep again on 1st and 10 to Albert Wilson in the end zone, but couldn't connect. Still making a concentrated effort to stretch the field, which I'm very happy with. But in that case, he needed a little more under the ball or to take a little bit off of it. Then on the next play, Smith's interception, it was batted up at the line. It was picked off by Orchard. It would have been a first down if it hadn't been tipped. In some cases, that's on the quarterback to not let the ball go into a defensive lineman's hands. And sometimes, that's on the offensive lineman. In this case, it was not consequential because the Chiefs get it right back on Marcus Peters' 8th interception of the season, now tied for 1st in the NFL. Rich Gannon said Peters was baiting Manziel on the throw and then went and got the ball. And I love that so much. Because Marcus Peters, a Pro Bowler now, I suppose, but a rookie. Marcus Peters, a rookie, is playing with the confidence to let a receiver get some space on him, recognize an inexperienced NFL quarterback, bait him, make him think the throw was going to be safe, and then has the explosiveness to actually make the play on the ball and make it look easy. A corner playing with that kind of confidence is unbelievable and such a treat. I think it was Cody Tapp on the 810 Chiefs pregame show that I run the board for on Sunday mornings in Kansas City. I think it was Cody that compared Marcus Peters to Ed Reed. And I'm going to talk about Marcus Peters more after we talk about this game. But that kind of defensive playmaker is rare. And I'll go into my whole Marcus Peters spiel in just a little while. But then offensively, the Chiefs couldn't do anything until 3rd and 14 when Alex Smith ran for 14. And then it was undone by a holding penalty on Jeff Allen, which is really a shame because it was a great play by Smith. And then 3rd and 24 appeared to be a quarterback draw. Nothing happened. Colquitt punted it down to the 9. Then the Browns went 3 and out. Zombo and Ford got to Manziel by the end of the 3rd down attempt and forced a poor throw, although there was never a sack in this game. If I hadn't mentioned it, Tom Bahaly and Justin Houston did not play in this game, and the Chiefs felt it. With about a minute and a half left, Alex Smith escaped a sack on a 4-man rush and tucked it and ran for 29. Then West got a handoff, and the Chiefs used their last timeout, which was strange. Then on 3rd and 7, Smith bought time. Kelsey abandoned his check down and went past the first down marker, which was a gift to me. And then Smith hit him. Kelsey kind of double caught the ball on the sidelines, but he did catch it. He did get it, keep his feet in. Smith then waited out. And this play goes back to what I was talking about earlier with Smith. Smith waited out the pressure, scrambled, waited for Kelsey to break off his route and get past the first down markers, and then hit him. And it was a very good play by Kelsey. It was a smart play by Kelsey, who got away from his guy and passed the first down marker. But another great play by Alex Smith. And I don't think I'm just an Alex Smith fanboy. I think I'm objective here. I try to be, at least. And things like that are plays that we didn't see very often last year behind that terrible offensive line, and even this year with the offensive line still gelling a little bit. And it's not all the offensive line. Some of it's Alex Smith. But these are things we did not see from him until these last handful of games. And now we're seeing it not only consistently, we're seeing it several times a game. There are at least 3 instances just in this first half where that throw to Macklin in the end zone, this play here, and even that deep throw that ended up for pass interference. And then the next play for his 4th one in the first half, touchdown to Travis Kelce, was a perfect throw as Kelce kind of fell across the goal line. He put it in a place where only Kelce could get it. It would have been a bad throw if Kelce was wide open in the middle of the field at the 50-yard line because he went to the ground to catch it. But in this case, he's at the goal line. Smith put it where only Kelce could get to it. Fantastic catch-up on that drive there. Perfect throw at the end to Kelce. Everyone, Smith and Kelce, for as much crap as the two of them get, and for as all of the righteous anger that people will throw at Travis Kelce for the mistakes he makes, I hope that drive gave you a remembrance of why he's so important to this team. Because I don't know who else is doing that. Jeremy Maclin is obviously doing everything as far as pass catchers go. And also, in a strange way, I think maybe Jeremy Maclin is getting undervalued, getting underpraised, because, and even by me, I'm not above this, because guys like Odell Beckham or DeAndre Hopkins or Antonio Brown, my goodness, Antonio Brown, those guys are doing incredible things statistically, and not that they're not doing incredible things within an actual game, they are, but because of the way we see stats on receivers in the modern NFL, the way we look at how we measure receivers, I don't think we're giving Jeremy Maclin enough credit for how important he is to this offense. If you take Jeremy Maclin off of this offense, I don't think the Chiefs are a playoff team. And it's hard to find players to say that about. That wasn't true for Jamaal Charles. Jamaal Charles left this team with his knee injury. Not to make it sound like he left. Obviously, he was taken from the team because of his knee injury. But Jamaal Charles was taken off this roster. And the Chiefs are going to the playoffs. Peyton Manning ended up being bad and then off of the Broncos. The Broncos made the playoffs. Ben Roethlisberger losing Ben Roethlisberger for a couple of games is going to cost the Steelers a playoff spot, among other things. But Le'Veon Bell left the Steelers and was not the reason they're not going to make the playoffs if they, in fact, don't. D'Angelo Williams has played very, very, very well. The Arizona Cardinals have lost every running back. The Carolina Panthers they lost Kelvin Benjamin in the preseason. They've been playing with no wide receivers. They just lost their first game. Without Jeremy Maclin, I don't think the Chiefs are in the playoffs. Not because of his statistical numbers, not because of his fantasy numbers, but because of how important he is to this offense. If you take him off, you've got Travis Kelce still. And then Albert Wilson and Jason Avant and Chris Conley have to step up for roles they're not ready for right now. And Alex Smith would be kind of hopeless as far as an outside threat that he really trusted. Albert Wilson has done some great things in the slot. But Chris Conley's not ready. Might Chris Conley, in his third year, explode? Yeah, I think there's actually real potential of that. I think him, in his third year with Andy Reid, we could be talking about the DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin thing now being an older Jeremy Maclin and a younger Chris Conley. I'm not predicting it per se, but I can see it happening. Without Jeremy Maclin on this team, I don't think the Chiefs are making the playoffs. That outside threat, that playmaker, that guy you can trust in the red zone, you remove Jeremy Maclin, I think this team misses the playoffs. And that wasn't true for Kelvin Benjamin, who left the Carolina Panthers without a true number one receiver, maybe without a number two receiver. Receivers in the NFL are pretty easy to have replacements for after that top tier. And I'm not even sure I would call Jeremy Maclin that top tier, because there are guys who are, you know, Calvin Johnsons and A.J. Greens and Demaryius Thomas kind of players that are put up such gaudy numbers and such big physical plays. The Chiefs couldn't replace Jeremy Maclin. I think we talk about MVPs of the team, and this was a discussion on the pregame show also. I can see it going to Marcus Peters, who Adam Teicher says he thinks there's a real argument there. I get it. That energy to the defense, huge. To Tom Bahali would probably be my choice because the defense has been so important. Alex Smith, also, maybe my first choice, actually, because he has taken such great steps. The offensive line and the way they've improved. But we don't talk about Jeremy Maclin because his numbers aren't there. And that's okay. But he just don't lose sight of how important he is to this team. So then halftime came. Not a perfect half, but a lot of nice plays. Peters and Smith had superb first halves. And the Chiefs blocked a field goal but right before halftime from the Browns after a long after Manziel pass and a long scramble to give them the Browns the shot of it, a field goal. So then halftime came and went. Manziel rolls then for 34 yards on a keeper on first down. Frank Zombo chased a fake handoff to the right and got totally sucked in. Somebody uses this again. I feel like I've had a lot of tangents on this episode. And let me know if that's better or worse for you as a listener. Would you rather me just go through the game and then save my tangents for the end, like I'm going to do with the Marcus Peters one? Or would you prefer to hear stuff pulled it right out of the game log? I kind of like doing it this way, but you'd let me know. You can tweet me at JB Briscoe, send me a message on Twitter at facebook.com/RTK Show. But this is a place where we undervalue Tom Bahali and Justin Houston, and we did it. I think D Ford helped us remember this, but Frank Zombo did it on this play for me at least. He chased the fake handoff to the right side, got totally sucked in, and then Manziel just scooted right around and took it for 34 yards. Justin Houston and Tom Bahali are elite-level pass rushers. Elite. Tom Bahali will be a Chiefs Hall of Famer. He'll end up in the Ring of Honor. He will be on a Hall of Fame ballot and receive some votes. Not enough, probably. Justin Houston will be all of those things, and if his career takes the path that his contract indicates it should, he'll probably be a Pro Football Hall of Famer at some point. They're elite pass rushers. The reason that I can say all those things about them is because of their ability to get to the quarterback and to do it dramatically in a way. I mean, they're playmakers. And the word playmaker is, I've used it for Alex Smith, I'm using it for Jeremy Maclin, I'm using it for Marcus Peters, for Tomba, for Houston, and I'm not using it lightly. Being a playmaker is one of the most important things you can do in the NFL. You need to have stability from your offensive line. That needs to be a unit. That's why it's not a sexy position, because you don't make plays. You just perform well. And that the offensive line is hugely important. Anyone who's listened to this show, especially in the preseason and those first several weeks, knows how I feel about that. And if you don't, I think it's important. The defensive line, in most cases, at least in a 3-4 defense like the Chiefs run, with three linemen and four linebackers, in a 3-4 defense, it needs to be a stable unit of pushing back on the offensive line. And the defensive line can absolutely make plays. And we see that from Dontari Poe all the time, from Alan Bailey and Mike DeVito. They've all done a great... Jay Howard. They've all made plays, no question. But that's not the most important thing from a defensive line. Outside linebackers, they hinge on making plays. But the kind of plays that we see get made, and I think Chiefs fans understand this better than most, because Derek Johnson does this all the time. You can make a big play that looks small. Derek Johnson up the middle, stopping a run, not just on the goal line, but at midfield, on 2nd and 6. Okay, if there's a rookie inside linebacker there, maybe that run goes for 4 or 5, and then they have a 3rd and 1, they pick up the first down, the drive keeps moving. With Derek Johnson, that is not going more than 2 yards, and then you're looking at 3rd and 4, and they have to pass, and then it's incomplete, and then they punt. Totally hypothetical situations. But you can make big plays that look small. And Tom Bahali and Justin Houston do that as well as anybody as far as outside linebackers go. And that's somewhere where D Ford and Frank Zombo need to improve. The case where it works for outside linebackers is setting that outside edge. If you beat the tackle, you are not just supposed to then immediately, or even if you're just trying to beat the tackle, you're not only supposed to follow the ball or where you think the ball is, as Frank Zombo bit on here. You have to set the edges because the play is still moving. If a back or the quarterback can fake one way and then go right past you, you've not done your job. You have to get up the field, not just in. You have to get up the field, establish yourself, and then get the quarterback. Obviously, in the NFL and in college even, that happens unbelievably quickly, but it happens. It happens every single time. I don't know, I could not tell you a time when I've seen Tom Bahali in his all of his years as a Chief where I've ever seen him crash to the quarterback and get beat, have the ball go past him again. If Tomba or Houston get up the field, nothing is getting outside of them, and more than likely, they're getting the ball carrier, be that the quarterback or the running back or whoever is making the play back there. So Frank Zombo did not have that happen here. And D Ford can rush the passer. And Frank Zombo, this was the only mistake that I recognized during this game. But not only do Tomba and Houston make big plays, they stop big plays by doing fundamental things very, very accurately. So I guess even more than saying big plays can look small, stopping big plays in ways that we'll never know, we'll never see. I cannot even imagine how many times Derek Johnson stopped a run for a gain of two or three that could have gone for 20 or 30 or 60. And we just never saw it because it looked like a small play. That's because of a good play on defense, because of something fundamental. Back to the game. The drive continued with two near fumbles, and Manziel kept pushing the Browns down the field, and Isaiah Crowell took it in for a 10-yard touchdown. At this point, the Chiefs weren't running the ball enough against a very bad run defense, and the Browns were doing it too well. Then on 2nd and 7, the Chiefs had the ball back. Smith hit Macklin on a great timing route towards the sidelines for 11, throwing past the sticks, past the first down marker. My favorite thing whenever it happens. Praise be to Andy. Then a short slant across the middle to Albert Wilson. Wilson took it for 19, and then he left the field gesturing to trainers. He ended up coming back, though. Then Smith went deep down the sidelines to Macklin on first down, but missed him about a yard too deep. A little more air under that one, and it's a touchdown. Then Smith took a sack. Chiefs punted. Punt went into the end zone, which was a disappointing end to a drive that had a couple of really nice plays. After that, Manziel was stopped with two near sacks, and the Browns set up to punt it back. The Browns then snapped to their personal protector on the punt, and he picked up the first down with a 10-yard run. So instead of the Chiefs getting the ball back with great field position, the Browns kept moving, which ended up being a whole lot worse than it was set up to look like. Because then on 3rd and 4, the Chiefs should have had a sack, but Manziel ran for the first down instead. 3rd and 3, Manziel kept it on a read option and got the first. 3rd and 10, Chiefs got pressure, but Manziel checked it to Duke Johnson, who picked up 8. 4th and 2, empty backfield. Manziel scrambled for the first. All things that probably don't happen with Houston and Tamba, but they weren't there for this. Then on 2nd and goal, D Ford got in Manziel's face. Manziel threw it away and got called for intentional grounding. Then on 3rd down, 36-yard field goal attempt was good, 17-13. So for all of that, it ends in 3 points. But it was scary and not a good drive for the Chiefs defense up until that intentional grounding call, thanks to D Ford. It was a 21-play drive. So it was 17-13 at that point. Obviously, the last scores of the game. 21-play drive, the most plays in a drive this NFL season. The Browns had 29 plays total in the game before that drive. Then a block in the back behind the return on kickoff allowed the Chiefs to get a beautiful start at the 3-yard line. Then on a 2nd down pass to Jeremy Macklin gave the Chiefs a 1st down and some breathing room. West could not convert again on 3rd and 1 against a terrible run defense. Andy Reid challenged the spot, and if Reid was going to call a timeout anyway, the challenge being used there was fine with me because there was only a few minutes left where they could use the challenge. But I did not want them to go for it on 4th down after the challenge was did not win. I wanted them to punt it and make the Browns go get a touchdown to win the game, which is what Andy Reid ended up doing after appearing to think about it for a while. And then Colquitt kicked it a beautiful 35 yards, which was a huge disappointment, and put the Chiefs in a really sketchy situation. Then listen to how the game ended. 2nd and 8, Manziel scrambled for about 2 hours and then threw it away. 3rd and 8, Manziel to Benjamin for the 1st down. 1st and 10, Duke Johnson about breaks it for a touchdown, got dragged down just past the 1st down marker. 2nd and 8, D Ford almost sacked Manziel, but didn't. Manziel made a bad throw. 3rd and 8, pass broken up by Eric Berry on Gary Barnage. The pass was behind Barnage. It should have been completed if it was a good throw. And then Rich Gannon did a quick breakdown on Manziel's footwork to show how he was opening up his feet and throwing the ball behind guys, throwing it to the left of guys. Very interesting by Rich Gannon. Then on 4th and 8, Manziel just heaved it into the end zone before anyone was even close, which appeared to be the end of the game. If the Chiefs had done anything on offense, it probably would have been. But the Chiefs went 3 and out. Woo-hee! Punctuated by an absurd screen on 3rd and 5 to Travis Kelce, which had no hope at all. It was a bad call. I hated the call. And then Smith probably should have audibled out of it whenever he saw what was going on there. But it was terrible. And I hate throwing the ball 0 forward yards on 3rd down and 5. So the game wasn't over yet. And the Browns just rolled along, a couple of good plays, a couple of bad ones. Then a conversion on 3rd and 10, the Browns got to the 32-yard line and spiked it. If the Browns would have taken the field goal this previous drive, they would have won it on this one. Keep that in mind. Or if they would have converted both field goals, I suppose. But then, so they just rolled along. Then on 4th and 10, Manziel zipped it for 12. But they could not get another snap off to spike the ball, and the game ended there. My goodness. In a game that should not have ended up being that close, but because of the injuries, was Chiefs win the game 17-13 in scary fourth quarter fashion. One post-game note before we move on. Andy Reid said that DeAnthony Thomas has some personal issues he's working through. It was either the exact quote or a paraphrase. I can't remember. But hopefully he'll be back for the playoffs. There's some speculation that it involved him not wanting to come back so soon after a concussion. Maybe he's not in good enough physical shape. Maybe it's an agent-related thing. We don't know. What I just said is all speculation. So I'm not even going to be critical or supportive of that, because that might not be it at all. But that's where DeAnthony Thomas stands currently. Now, Marcus Peters, Pro Bowler, rookie, presumably Defensive Rookie of the Year. I would support that. But I think it's important to understand how Marcus Peters is having such a great year. But not like how he's doing it physically, and not why it's happening, but the way in which his season is so good right now. I think it's important to understand it all. So I'll argue for him as Defensive Player of the Year, and I'll argue that his Pro Bowl selection is justified. He ties the league lead in interceptions. But when announcers talk about him as having, you know, such a great season, I can't help but cringe a little, because I think it's missing what he's doing and crediting him with something else. So hear me out on this. Marcus Peters is not having a shutdown corner kind of year. He's not Nnamdi Asamoah in his prime, or Darrelle Revis, or even some of those other corners that you would go, oh, they're going to go there and die. But the two that jump to mind for me are Revis and Asamoah. Because those guys had a different kind of respect and a different kind of thing they were incredibly good at. They were shutdown corners who eventually didn't even get challenged. And maybe Marcus Peters ends up there, but that's not where he is right now. Peters leads the NFL among corners in times targeted and passes at him. And Peters' season has been so great because though he's allowed a lot of big plays with that massive number of targets, he's made a lot of big plays. He's turned a lot of those targets, again, that massive sample size, into 8 interceptions, the pick 6, into big plays and even big returns. Even though he's allowed guys to get over his head, to get behind him, he's made mistakes. He's looked like a rookie at rare times. But he's made big plays. He has created big plays. And I will take that 100% of the time. The ability to do that on the defensive side of the ball is unbelievably valuable. It might be the most valuable thing that we don't talk about as often as we should. That is how you beat superior teams. Every team can occasionally make a big offensive play. Everyone there knows what the play is supposed to be. Jimmy Clausen can hit Kamar Aiken every once in a while for 40 yards. Or a handoff that could have gone for 3 yards will get one better block than they expected. The running back will make one guy miss. One guy will miss a tackle. Any of those things happen, and it's a 75-yard touchdown run. That can happen at any point. But to be able to find an interception, to create an interception or even a pick six in a pinch, totally changes the game, regardless of the opponent. It shifts the momentum. It might shift the scoreboard. It shifts the power balance of the game. And as I mentioned earlier, I think it was Cody Tapp who said it. It could have been Mark Boberichter or even someone else, I suppose. Marcus Peters has an Ed Reed factor on defense that I don't think we've ever seen in recent Chiefs history. And you can throw it to Eric Berry and say he's had a little bit of that. But Eric Berry, his strength is more in that consistency he's developing, I think, this year. But he was a great run stopper. He's improved at his ability to cover. He does a lot of things very well. But he does not play the thrown up ball like Ed Reed ever did. Even Troy Polamalu didn't do it quite like that, although he's the next guy you think of. Because he was a run stopper also. And a pass rusher. Marcus Peters will bait a quarterback, let him make a throw that he thinks is going to be open, and then just go get it. And then just go take it. And that is phenomenally important in the NFL. And on a play-to-play basis, Marcus Peters is getting better already. From Pro Football Focus, Marcus Peters before the bye allowed 60% of the passes his way to be completed, allowed seven touchdowns, had three interceptions, and a 101.7 quarterback rating on passes at him. After the bye, 41%, almost 20% better. No touchdowns allowed, five interceptions, and a 25.7 passer rating allowed. 107 to 25.7. Quarterback ratings have dropped 76% against Marcus Peters since the bye week. That's a big number. That is a big number. Marcus Peters has allowed seven touchdowns this year and has eight interceptions, but all seven of those touchdowns came before the bye week. So not only is everything that I just said about him being a playmaker first, he's on a shutdown corner right now. And in a way, I hope he never is. I'll clarify that in a second. But he's getting better at it on a play-to-play basis. And he's allowed a bunch of yards. Again, he's been beaten deep. He's been beaten deep. He's been beaten in front of him. But he is making big, big plays. The reason I say I kind of hope he's never a shutdown corner that people never throw at is because, and he said this in an interview that we played on 810. We played a clip of it. Someone asked him, he said, do you expect quarterbacks to eventually give you that respect of a shutdown corner like Ed Reed or Darrelle Revis? Namdi Asomugha or Darrelle Revis, guys that don't even throw at you anymore. And his answer was, well, I hope they don't. I hope they don't figure it out. Because he wants to continue being able to play the ball and take the ball back. Being able to shut down a number one receiver is a hugely important factor, but being able to take the ball back is even more so. Now, if you look at the Chiefs and how the Chiefs are set up, Peters has been challenged a ton, but when you don't challenge him, you have to challenge Sean Smith. And if he stays healthy, eventually Philip Gaines. If you're going to throw to the slot, Ron Parker is having a heck of a year playing whenever he's played the slot corner position. That secondary is built of guys that want you to challenge them. And that kind of confidence in a defensive backfield is essentially irreplaceable. If you take that factor away from the Seahawks, that just won a Super Bowl and then went back to the next one, it's disappeared from them a little bit this year, but they've struggled more. They're a wild card team. Whenever that disappears from a team, the entire dynamic of the team changes. And this year, with that kind of confidence, with that desire to be challenged, to have the ball thrown at you, and you get put in the spotlight, the cornerback is a spotlight position, man. You don't get shown unless the ball comes to you. And then when it does, every eye is on you because you're either going to make a play, stop a play, or get totally played. That's every single snap for corners. You either let your guy get open and the quarterback gets to make a play, or you turn it around, or you just stop it. It's a spotlight position. The Seahawks used that to their advantage and won a Super Bowl with it. The Chiefs have that kind of confidence, swagger even. They have that kind of desire to be challenged in the defensive secondary. And that's a pretty incredible thing because right now they're also performing up to it. I was about to go on to talk about the Raiders in the Chiefs-Raiders game. But I just saw a thing on ESPN.com with Tom Jackson and Chris Carter and Chris Berman talking about the Chiefs. This was 20 seconds ago. I just watched it and then hit record. And Tom Jackson was praising the Chiefs on some level, but said he thinks the Chiefs have a small margin for error. And then he went on to say, defensively, if the Steelers make the playoffs, if the Patriots get healthy, or if the Broncos figure out their quarterback stuff, those teams will score points. And I'm trying to collect my thoughts a little bit here. Those three statements all begin with the word if. So there's a darn good chance some of those things don't happen. I don't think the Patriots are going to be magically healed in the next 2 weeks. I don't think the Broncos are going to figure out their quarterback situation. And I don't think the Steelers are going to make the playoffs. The idea that Chiefs have a small margin for error, I think, is a really interesting point to the idea that I think it's a really lazy point. It's a really lazy perspective. That is a bad take. Because the Chiefs don't have any smaller of a margin for error than anybody else. And just, if you don't get that, look at the last 9 weeks. The Chiefs don't have a small margin for error. They have the same margin for error as anybody else. Because if the pass rush isn't there, if Justin Houston and Tom Bahali don't show up, then Derek Johnson will do what he can to keep the run defense together. Other guys will get enough pressure, and the secondary will take the biggest step to help cover that wound. With no pass rush from Justin Houston or Tom Bahali, the secondary kept Johnny Manziel, his arm was tied to his side. Now, the run game suffered hugely. We talked about that several times. But the secondary kept that game in check defensively. The offense struggled. I don't know what the margin for error is on the defense, because if the secondary is having a poor game and the pass rushers are back, that secondary is going to look a whole lot better because the quarterback's not going to have any time. Offensively, is there a small margin for error? Maybe, but Alex Smith has been operating. I would say Alex Smith has had mistakes. There have been flaws in the offense. Travis Kelce's put the ball on the ground. They're playing without Jamaal Charles. Alex Smith has missed some deep throws. Alex Smith has missed some shorter throws. They've made mistakes and continued winning. And in a lot of cases, not against playoff caliber teams, and I get that. But to say that there's a small margin for error is something you say about the old Alex Smith teams. You say, well, this team plays perfectly, they're a threat. That's not what the Chiefs are anymore. The Chiefs are very good in multiple categories. They're flawed, as I spent the beginning of the show talking about, they are flawed in many categories. They're flawed they slip up. Which I think is the exact opposite of saying they have a small margin for error. They have these flaws, and they're still there with every other team. If they do play with a small margin for error, and they just don't err, then this team wins the Super Bowl, I suppose. If this team doesn't make mistakes, they win the Super Bowl. I think they'll make mistakes, and they have made mistakes throughout this entire season, and they've been on a 9-game winning streak, and it's going to be 10 after this week, in my humble opinion. I just think that's such a lazy thing to say, that it's all about a margin for error for the Chiefs. It's not. They've made mistakes. The way they're operating now, it looks like they've been playing with a small margin for error, if you look at the box score, because that's what this Chiefs team is. That's how they play. They play by not making giant mistakes. There are no 4-interception games. That's just who they are as a team. I don't know. I don't even have a chance to think about that. That bothered me so much. To say the Chiefs have a small margin for error, and then to say, if the Steelers make it, if the Patriots get healed, if the Broncos have the quarterback thing figured out. Those are three if statements. And you're saying with the Chiefs, well, if everything goes right for the Chiefs, you're saying that about every other team also. But you're not saying the Patriots have a small margin for error. The Patriots have a tiny margin for error. Their offense is Tom Brady right now and Rob Gronkowski. Their defense is very good. The Steelers have a terrible defense. They're operating with a small margin for error because their offense is all they have. The Broncos, same thing for the Broncos, but the inverse. If their offense plays so poorly that the defense gets the short field a lot, as what happened in Denver when the Chiefs won, they're toast. If their defense slips up, they're toast. Their offense isn't going to catch up. I don't understand. I know I'm biased, but I try really hard to be objective while also being a Chiefs fan. That's kind of like the entire purpose of this podcast. And what I hope you listening an hour in right now, I hope that's why you listen in some way, is to hear another Chiefs fan talk about the team, hopefully, in most cases, objectively and fairly, and then hopefully provide something interesting to the conversation. I hope you get that from this show. I really do. But I know that I'm biased. And I get that. But to say that the Chiefs have a small margin for error, right after saying if, for the three biggest name teams in the AFC, is such a small thing to say. It's such a closed-minded perspective. And I am just as cynical about the Chiefs as anyone else you can find. They haven't won a playoff game since I've been born. I get it. I know. But to act like the Chiefs have a small margin for error when you need three pieces of magic to happen for the Broncos, Patriots, and Steelers, when the Chiefs are going to go start playing in Houston, who could conceivably be starting Brandon Weeden at quarterback at home in a playoff game, and to say that the Chiefs have the small margin for error blows my mind. Totally beyond my comprehension. What a strange, strange thing to say. Okay, Raider time. Chiefs-Raiders game, I'm all fired up now. The Chiefs-Raiders game got moved to 3:25 on Sunday. It will be playing at the same time as the Broncos game, Broncos-Chargers, to create some drama for the AFC West. And Terrez Paylor and Adam Teicher both had some reports about leaving wiggle room as far as if they're going to play with starters or not in this game. And I'm going to go by assuming the starters will play, because going through ESPN's NFL playoff machine, which is just a fun, has been fun the last few weeks. At this point, it's pretty cut and dry. But if all the favorites win and then the Chiefs lose, then the Chiefs would fall to the sixth seed and play and go to Cincinnati instead of going to Houston. And if that's accurate, and if ESPN has it right here, that would be a huge step back for the Chiefs. Although I think there's a good chance the Bills win. Or the Jets lose at Buffalo. And if that's the case, and the Steelers win, then the Steelers would be the 6th seed, and the Chiefs would be the 5th seed, regardless of if the Chiefs win against the Raiders or not. And that that Bills game, the Bills-Jets game, is actually at noon Central Time. So the Chiefs will know. If the Jets lose in Buffalo, the Chiefs are locked into the 5th seed, and unless the Broncos lose. In which case, they could become all the way go up to the 3 seed when they would host the Jets or the Steelers, whichever, obviously, just depends on if the Jets win or not. But let's say the Chiefs do play their starters, and because I don't think that Denver has the Chargers at home. I don't think the Chargers win that game. I think there's a 15% chance the Chargers take that game. Maybe not that good of a chance, because the Broncos need to win it. And they're probably going to end up getting a bye also. Anyway. Say that game is probably going to go that way, but you don't know because it's playing at the same time. If the Jets win in Buffalo, starters need to play. If the Bills win, I don't think it's so cut and dry. Either way, though, I would be surprised if Justin Houston or Houston or Haley play very much. In either case, I think they play a little if they can to try to get a little bit of game speed back. Not that either of them need, they're both veterans, but just to get a little bit of game action back, if they're capable. And if they're not capable, obviously, keep them on ice and try to have them, by any means necessary, to have them ready for the playoff game. Other than that, your offensive line is going to play. Alex Smith is going to play. Although Chase Daniel playing in a probably meaningless game against the Raiders is not a death sentence for this team. But the bigger key is the stars. And Sean Smith and Marcus Peters, those are guys that if they got hurt in this game, you would never forgive yourself because you'd be going into the playoffs without one of them. But you're probably not going to win if neither of them play. So let's just take, maybe we'll do a tiny bit of both. I think if the starters don't play in this game, if it's all backups, I think the Raiders do win and the Chiefs drop their last game and their last home game in a still a pretty tight match, maybe 24-20 or something. And I think the Raiders are a good team. Khalil Mack is going to be a handful for whoever ends up having to block him for the majority of the game. But if the starters play, I think the Chiefs will be able to exploit them in a lot of the same ways they did in their last matchup. The Chiefs should be able to establish the run early. You've got to account for Khalil Mack, but they did just fine with him last time. I think Jeremy Maclin can still show their sets of the secondary up. It's pretty generic assessments here because I don't think the Chiefs are going to be doing anything insane, because it's all about next week, and there is a next week now. For the first time going into a game, the Chiefs know they will be playing in the playoffs. I don't want them to take their foot off the gas. I don't want this to end up coming back to bite them, but I'm not terribly concerned about this game, again, unless there's the fear of them dropping to the sixth seed if the Jets win in Buffalo. If that's the case, I think the Chiefs put all their chips out on the table to make sure they're still going to Houston. Don't let anything that any of the coaches or players say fool you. They all know, and they would all rather go to Houston than to Cincinnati, even though it's probably AJ McCarron playing for the Bengals. I think the Chiefs would win either of those games on the road, but I'd rather play Houston at this point. They all know that I'd rather go to Houston. That's all well and good. I don't know how the Raiders would keep up in this game offensively. Derek Carr is very good, Amari Cooper is very good, Latavius Murray, all real pieces, all real threats, all things that could keep the Chiefs' hands full. But if you want to go back and look at what happened in the first matchup between these teams, maybe we can take a little bit away from it. It ended up being a 2-touchdown win for the Chiefs because of a 20-point fourth quarter. Not only was Oakland winning going into the fourth quarter, it could have gone either way the whole time until, again, that last push away. Alex Smith in that game, only 162 yards, but threw for those two touchdown passes to Jeremy Maclin in the fourth quarter. The Chiefs were driving at the end of the third. Both teams exchanged touchdowns, in fact, all the way until the fourth when the Chiefs pushed away with those last two after tying the game up at 20. Big day for Jeremy Maclin there. It was 9 for 95 and 2 touchdowns. Amari Cooper was more or less shut down, and I think the secondary has gotten better since then. Also, Derek Carr, 3 picks against the Chiefs in that game. I think we see Derek Carr struggle here even more so. Amari Cooper will not be a force. I think we see a nice game from Jeremy Maclin. I think Travis Kelce has a nice push here. West and Murray are two very talented running backs, but I think Murray has the better day once again just because he's going to have to get the ball more. But if the Chiefs choose to go for this game, they establish the run with West, give him more than just 9 carries, which he had in Oakland. Establish the run a little bit better. I think the Chiefs basically have the advantage in every unit here. Even if they don't have Holly or Houston, in which case I would prefer Oakland's pass rush because it has Khalil Mack right now. Ultimately, I think the Chiefs win this game with their starters. I'd like to see the offense bounce back here, so I'm going to say with a little bit of hope, 30-20, keeping Oakland at the same number from the previous matchup. Without the starters, I think the Chiefs win it in a closer game, 24-20, though I don't think the defenses would be holding the Raiders to 20 points if Peters and Smith also sat, along with some of the safeties. But the defense is already so banged up, I think most of the defense would look the same either way. I hope you can forgive the questionable analysis for the Raiders game, because I had a lot of fun doing this show. It's one of the most fun shows. It might be the first over an hour show of the regular season, and it's for the last game of the regular season. I don't know why I picked a vacation day to go over an hour. But just a lot of fun doing this episode of Roughing the Kicker here on ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. Twitter.com/JBBRISCO. Patreon.com/RTK. Facebook.com/RTKShow. All different ways you can get in touch with me or support me. All those links are on Arrowhead Addict on the post there. They're all in every podcast download note thingy. As always, thank you for your time. Thank you for listening and for tuning in each and every week. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes if you haven't already. And let me know what you thought of this episode. I really liked it. Did you like it? If I had fun and you didn't like listening to it, frankly, it doesn't really matter. But I guess you probably would have turned it off by now. I guess I'm figuring out that it's harder to stop talking whenever the Chiefs are going to the playoffs. It's more fun to do that kind of show, I suppose. Bye, Mom.